For decades, PFAS chemicals seemed like modern miracles. Then toxicologists discovered some disconcerting problems. This is The People's Pharmacy with Terry and Joe Graydon.
Forever chemicals, also called per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS for short, are now ubiquitous in our environment and in us.
Such compounds have been used in nonstick cooking equipment, fast food packaging, carpets and upholstery, even dental floss. What are they doing in our bodies?
How are you exposed to PFAS and how can you reduce your exposure? We'll get advice from a world-renowned toxicologist.
Coming up on The People's Pharmacy, how you can avoid the harms from forever chemicals.
In The People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, most Americans are trying to put COVID in the rearview mirror. At this point, the rate of infections is low around the country, although epidemiologists expect increases during the winter. But even past COVID infections are causing trouble. Kids and teens who had COVID are 50% more likely than their peers to develop type 2 diabetes. Investigators compared the health records of 600,000 young people between January 2020 and December 2022. Approximately half had COVID during that time. The other half had colds, flu, or another respiratory infection. The absolute risk of diabetes is low, under 1% for people between 10 and 19 years old.
There is another disconcerting long-term consequence of infection with SARS-CoV-2. Researchers analyzed data from the UK Biobank. Over 10,000 people had confirmed cases of COVID-19. They were compared to over 200,000 control patients. Those individuals who had a COVID infection were two times more likely to experience a major cardiac event. That means a heart attack, a stroke, or death. People who had been hospitalized with more severe cases of COVID were almost four times more likely to experience cardiovascular complications. People with type A and B blood were more susceptible than those with type O blood. Perhaps more alarming, the risk persisted for at least 3 years. The consequences of a COVID infection increased the cardiovascular risk almost as much as well-established risk factors such as diabetes or peripheral artery disease. These results may encourage cardiologists to consider infection as an important risk factor for heart disease.
We've been tracking the rise in whooping cough cases over the last several months. Last week, the CDC reported that the U.S. has topped 16,000 cases in 2024. That's four times more cases of pertussis than in a comparable time frame last year. The West Coast is being hit especially hard, but whooping cough is a national problem. That's partly because many children are not being vaccinated against this very serious respiratory tract infection. The pandemic interfered with some regular well-child visits and contributed to vaccine hesitancy. If mothers are vaccinated during pregnancy, the infants are protected until they're old enough to be vaccinated themselves.
Benzoyl peroxide is a mainstay in dozens of topical acne remedies. Dermatologists have been recommending this medication for decades. A new study published in one of the most respected dermatology journals reports that a surprisingly large number of acne and rosacea topical treatments are unstable and contain high levels of benzene. The authors, writing in the Journal of Investigative Dermatology, point out that benzene is a well-recognized human carcinogen. In their research, investigators used mass spectrometry to detect benzene in 111 unopened products that had been stored at room temperature in chain pharmacies. The authors of the study report that 34% of the tested products had unacceptable levels of benzene. The lead investigator notes that the discovery of benzene formation in benzoyl peroxide acne treatments presents a potentially serious public health risk. It remains to be seen how the FDA reacts to this latest research.
Sciatica, resulting from a herniated disc, is a painful condition that can be quite disabling. Some people cycle through numerous treatments before they find any relief. A new randomized double-blind study from China shows that acupuncture can be effective. Investigators recruited more than 200 individuals with chronic sciatica. They were assigned to 10 sessions of acupuncture or sham acupuncture. At the beginning of the study, participants rated their pain and disability. Those who got actual acupuncture got significantly better pain relief and less disability starting by the second week. The benefit lasted for a year. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.
Welcome to the People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. PFAS compounds once seemed like marvels of modern chemistry. That's because they resist water and oil. That makes them ideal for waterproofing rain gear and footwear. They also resist stains, so they're frequently used in carpets and upholstery. These compounds are extremely durable. And that is part of the problem.
To help us understand the harms of forever chemicals, we turn to Dr. Linda Birnbaum. She's a toxicologist who directed the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences and the National Toxicology Program. Prior to that, she directed environmental research at the EPA. Dr. Birnbaum served as president of the Society of Toxicology and chaired the Division of Toxicology at the American Society for Pharmacology and Experimental Therapeutics. She's a scholar in residence at Duke University.
Welcome back to the People's Pharmacy, Dr. Linda Birnbaum.
Pleasure to see you again. It's been a long pandemic.
Yes, it
and
indeed.
I think the last time I saw you was literally the day before everything shut down, so it's good to be back.
Dr. Birnbaum, you know, researchers have known about the potential problems of PFAS chemicals for decades, and we've been talking to you about it, these forever chemicals, for at least 15 years. So let's start at the beginning. What does PFAS stand for, and why are these chemicals such a problem?
PFAS is a terrible acronym for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances.
But when you say that, we can understand why they might want an acronym. It's a long name.
That's correct. And there are over 12,000 of them.
No way.
Some people say over 15,000 of them.
PFAS chemicals.
Correct.
That many. And what unites them? What do they have in common?
What they have in common is lots of fluorine atoms linked to carbons. And the carbon-fluorine bond is one of the strongest bonds that exists. And it barely exists at all in nature. Very, very rare. Which means that we have not, we meaning biota, have not figured out a way how to get rid of it. And that is one of the big problems. These chemicals are incredibly persistent in the environment, and many of them are extremely persistent in us.
Hence, forever chemicals.
Hence the nickname.
Now, you are a toxicologist, first and foremost, and many other things as well. But our listeners are probably not as familiar as they should be with what is a toxicologist. So please enlighten.
Well, really, a toxicologist who studies the science of safety. What is it that makes chemicals bad for us? And then what can we do to prevent that from happening?
Well, let's drill down on PFAS chemicals. First of all, why don't you tell us where they're found? Because 12, 15,000 chemicals, I'm sure they're found almost in everything, but in the most common places that we might not particularly realize.
Well, they're probably used to stain-proof your carpets.
Uh-huh.
Still, to this day.
Yes, many of them are still used. Different PFAS than were used 20 years ago, but they're still PFAS.
Mm-hmm.
PFAS are used in the production of Teflon.
So the original nonstick.
The original nonstick, but not the original PFAS that was used to make the Teflon. There's a new PFAS that's used to make the Teflon.
So if you have a nonstick pan, nice new nonstick pan, okay, because they are selling a lot of nonstick cookware, I have noticed. I don't buy it, but I have noticed that it's being sold. Is that likely to be a source of PFAS?
It depends whether you bought one, how it's labeled. I know I went to the, I think it was Walmart a couple of years ago, because I threw out all of my Teflon pans.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, I want to buy a nonstick pan that has no Teflon.
Mm-hmm.
And there were pans that were labeled, great big labels, no PFOA.
Okay.
PFOA was actually removed from commerce in this country by 2013.
So no PFOA didn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean no PFAS, because Gen X was being used to make Teflon and maybe other PFAS as well. So what you need to do is there are a couple of kinds of nonstick pans you can buy that have no PFAS, PFAS.
How would we know?
Usually they have a big sign saying no PFAS, or there are a couple of websites where you can get the information. And I think the Green Science Policy Institute's website is good for that, as is the Environmental Working Group's website.
Oh,
so we've
okay.
identified carpets, because a lot of our carpets have no stain. That's the convenience. It's like, oh, if I, you know, drop something on the carpet, there's a chemical there that's going to prevent it from, you know, being absorbed. We have our nonstick, so we have to pay attention to that. What about clothes? It's not something that most people think very much about, but the rain gear in particular.
Well, it's not only the rain gear, and I think that's important. If you buy something, again, if it has no PFAS on it, it's liable to have a label or a tag that will say no PFAS. But otherwise, if you buy a water repellent or any water resistant, it will have some kind of PFAS in it to provide that. But there are other kind of clothes.
Uh-huh.
In other words, there are studies that shown that children's uniforms, for example, often have PFAS in them.
Oh,
there
why?
Are studies that show that exercise clothes often have PFAS in them.
Why would kids' clothes have PFAS?
So that they don't stain.
Ah.
And the exercise clothes?
Maybe so that your sweat rolls off.
I
can't answer you why.
Yeah.
But I think the question is why in the heck is it there is a valid question.
And how can we avoid it is also a really important question.
It's a huge question, and it's very difficult for an individual to avoid PFAS in the vast number of consumer products in which it is found.
One of the areas that we understand there's a lot of PFAS of one sort or another is fast food packaging.
That is true, although I will say some of the big fast food users like McDonald's, Burger King, some of the others have announced that they will have no more PFAS in their packaging by 2025. There are some that have already stopped using it. But sometimes we still should be asking the question, well, what are they using instead?
Now, what about things like furniture? Because I'm thinking there's a lot of fabric that people want to avoid stains. So not only in our houses, but in our automobiles, because when you buy a car that doesn't have, you know, plastic or leather, it's fabric, and there's a concern about stains. Do they have PFAS?
The answer is yes. And we still have issues with flame retardants, of course, in cars as well. And that's why in the summertime, you should always open your door and let the car air out for a few minutes before you get into a hot car, because a lot of those chemicals will have volatilized, gone into the air while they were sitting in that very hot car, and you don't want to breathe them in.
No. So that's a good tip right there. Air out the car before you get into it.
What about shoes? I'm thinking, again, waterproof shoes, hiking boots, all of that. You know, they advertise, oh, waterproof.
My last pair of hiking boots, I made sure I didn't buy the ones that were claimed to be totally waterproof. I think, to an extent, as an individual, as a consumer, you can't avoid the stuff. There are a number of states now that have actually passed laws which will ban all PFAS in certain kinds of clothing, certain kinds of consumer products. California has a law that's going into effect. New York has a law. And I think that, you know, as a society, at some point, we're going to have to step back and say, yeah, it was really nice to have that stain-proof carpet, although I was always pretty good with, you know, soda water and a little bit of rubbing and towels to sop it up, or salt for red wine, always worked pretty well. I think we're going to have to start asking questions about what do we really need.
Now, a lot of people are going to say, Dr. Birnbaum, that, well, heck, I don't lick the carpet. I don't touch my waterproof hiking boots other than to put them on. But what about how we might be exposed to those chemicals from those products? And more to the point, what about our skin care? I'm thinking now about cosmetics, for example, and I even sometimes wonder about the so-called waterproof sunscreens, what chemicals they're being used. So just, you know, it's how are we actually getting these chemicals into our bodies?
Okay. They're really good questions, Joe. Let me take the cosmetics and the sunscreens first. And I think at least a lot of the waterproof sunscreens are the ones that are the metal ones. Mm-hmm. And those are inherently waterproof. So I don't think that's as much of an issue. And, of course, some of the other sunscreens have endocrine disrupting chemicals in them, which is a whole nother issue that we could talk about.
Right.
Now, cosmetics is a totally different issue. There have been a couple studies done in the last 2 or 3 years which have found that, for example, waterproof mascara is a big problem. So I know I was going shopping with my daughter for makeup, and she, you know, the salesperson showed her this lovely, and I said, you don't want that. That's not a good idea. But a lot of lipstick, and because people want it to stay on, mm-hmm. and mascara and some other products.
You're listening to Dr. Linda Birnbaum, who was director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences and the National Toxicology Program. She's a scholar in residence at Duke University.
After the break, what other potential exposures to PFAS should we strive to avoid?
How can we test our water to find out if it's contaminated?
Do filters work to remove forever chemicals from water?
How could exposure to PFAS affect our health? Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon.
And I'm Joe Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by CocoVia Dietary Supplements. CocoVia Cardio Health is offered in both convenient capsule and powder formats, with each serving containing 500 milligrams of cocoflavanols to support heart health. More information at CocoVia.com.
Today, we're considering how to avoid the harms from forever chemicals. We've been talking about all the places that PFAS chemicals can be found, from our homes and our automobiles to fast food packaging and cosmetics. What other exposures could be problematic, and what are the consequences?
We're talking with Dr. Linda Birnbaum. She's a toxicologist and scientist emeritus. She was director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences and the National Toxicology Program for many years. Dr. Birnbaum served as president of the Society of Toxicology and chaired the Division of Toxicology at the American Society for Pharmacology and Experimental Therapeutics. She's a scholar in residence at Duke University.
Dr. Birnbaum, so cosmetics, we need to be careful. We need to think about all of the pots and pans we might be looking at that could be nonstick. We need to watch out for waterproof clothing or shoes. What other exposures should we be watching for?
And how are we getting this stuff in our bodies?
Well, first of all, there are over 200 different use categories for PFAS. So if you talk about stain repellency on fabric, that's a huge category, and there are many different examples that would fall under that. I mean, basically, PFAS are everywhere. They get into the food that we eat, the air that we breathe, the water that we drink. I mean, they're really everywhere. But how do they get into us? Well, if you're not eating it or drinking it, PFAS, say, from your stain-resistant items, all your consumer products, you know, they're not covalently bound, so they're not chemically linked to the products with which they're found.
So they're linked to each other, that fluoride and that carbon.
Correct, but
are
the
very
chemical
tight.
itself, you know, like the unique chemical.
Yeah.
And that can come out. So, for example, house dust or office dust is loaded with PFAS. And so you get it into yourself that way. First of all, people are not very good about avoiding putting their hands in their mouths, despite what we learned during the pandemic. You know, so people touch things and their hands go in their mouth. People put food down. It may sit out. Things get onto it. And some PFAS, not the what we call the legacy ones, the ones that are no longer being intentionally made. And I stress that word intentionally because some of them are produced from some of the other PFAS.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But they're not, they can be absorbed through our skin, but not terribly well. But some of the newer PFAS, some of the new replacement ones can be very volatile, so you can inhale them.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them also can be absorbed through our skin more readily than some of the old ones.
If we were to test ourselves, would we all have PFAS in our bodies?
Yes.
I also wanted to ask, you said if you're not eating it, okay, it's if it's not in your food and if it's not in your water, but we've discussed the fact that it probably is in your food and it might be in your water. Here in North Carolina, we've learned that there was quite significant contamination of a couple of very important water sources, the Cape Fear River, the Haw River, had a lot, or maybe still do, have a lot of PFAS in them. And there are wells that may also be contaminated. How can we find out whether our water is contaminated? And if it is, how can we avoid that? Are there filters that will remove PFAS?
You have several really good questions here.
Yes, quite a few. Sorry.
Quite a few. That's okay. So the issue is, read your water at least once a year. You usually get, at least I do in Chapel Hill from OWASA, I get a printout of what's in my water, including the PFAS. The day that EPA proposed regulations on 6 PFAS in drinking water, I got an email from my water supply that night telling me that my water exceeded those new recommended limits and that they were going to be working on doing something. I haven't heard anything, and it's almost 6 months now, but I believe they are looking at it. I happen to know what was in my house's drinking water, my home's drinking water, because a friend of mine who's a professor at Duke actually was doing a study of what were people having in their water and did filters work, you know, in-house kind of filters, and they had sampled my water. So I knew. I would tell you that 5 years ago, I thought my water wasn't bad, but it exceeds those new proposed regulatory limits. Now, I don't – that was one question.
What to do about it?
So do the filters actually work?
That is an important question. It depends on the kind of filter. Granular activated charcoal, just a charcoal filter, which many people have in their refrigerators – will do a pretty good job, certainly, of removing the older kinds of PFAS, the kinds of PFAS that are going to be regulated. They don't do a perfect job of removing some of the new PFAS. But, you know, I don't want perfect to be the enemy of the good. And if they remove some of the new ones as well, that's a benefit. Reverse osmosis, which you can also put in either as a whole house filter or an under the sink filter, works, essentially removes everything. Now, with any filter that you have, there are two issues to think about. You got to change it. You know, you can't, if it says change it every 6 months, you can't wait for a year, because this study showed that if you left too long, then what was trapped on the filter would start being released.
Get into your water.
Into your water. So right. You've got to change it. And then the other issue is, well, what do you do with the filter? Here you have now a heavily contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
What do? You just put it in the waste?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a good question, and that's making me think, well, my refrigerator has a little spout where I can get cold water. I do change that filter every 6 months, but I have just been throwing that old filter in the ordinary trash. Is that the wrong thing to do?
At this point, I don't know what else to suggest. These compounds, some of them, the legacy ones especially, PFOA, PFOS, they can be removed well by the filters, and they are now, there's a proposal that they be considered hazardous waste.
Okay.
So if they're hazardous waste, they will have to end up going to a hazardous waste
mm-hmm.
kind of landfill.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a huge issue.
Yeah.
Because if you put chemicals like this just in the landfill, in a regular, what's going to happen? Over time, they're going to leach out, contaminate your groundwater, and eventually we'll all be being exposed to them again.
Well, that really does raise the question of how would we know what's going on? Is it possible to be tested for PFAS chemicals?
Again, a good question and not an easy answer. The answer is there are laboratories which can do the measurement. There's even one major laboratory which has developed a finger stick. So you just have to prick your finger. You need just a teeny drop of blood. You send it to them, and they can tell you up to a large number of PFAS, more than are routinely measured even by CDC. But it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you are, say, in a special study, or my understanding is here in North Carolina, there may be a way to get insurance to pay for it. Someone from the Department of Environmental Quality, I think, unless she was from the Department of Health and Human Services in the state, was talking about that at a meeting I was at. So there are places you can get it tested, but it costs a lot of money if you have to pay for it yourself.
But then the next question is, because I know a lot of people are saying, well, so what, Dr. Birnbaum?
Mm-hmm.
So what if I've got PFAS in my body? Everybody has PFAS in their bodies. It's just reality. And that's probably true. As you said, we all have it. Why should I worry? What are the problems or consequences of being exposed to PFAS over your lifetime?
Well, PFAS have been associated with a large number of adverse health effects, cancer included, heart disease, liver effects, liver disease like very elevated cholesterol. Impacts include preterm birth, reduced fertility, low birth weight for the infant, not because they're just preterm. There's also associations with increased weight and type 2 diabetes. I mean, there's a whole plethora of adverse health effects that have been reported in multiple studies to be associated with PFAS. Now, I'm a big believer that if we see things in people and we see the same things happening in our animals, and I'm not talking only about rats and mice, I'm talking about monkeys, I'm talking about fish and birds. And if you see kind of the same effects happening, why would we not believe the observational human studies? And there have now been probably at least 1,000 of them that are done. You know, some are better than others. Not all show exactly the same thing. But overall, it's clear that these chemicals have the ability to impact our health.
Well, certainly the effects that you've just named off have been increasing at a dramatic rate. The type 2 diabetes, the increased weight, the problems with fertility, the low weight births or preterm births, high cholesterol, all of those problems have been increasing. Now the big question is, okay, if PFAS could be causing all that stuff, and we can find out if our bodies are heavily contaminated with PFAS, now, is there any way that we can decontaminate ourselves? That would be the really hard thing.
We really don't have a good solution to that. We know that for women, menstruation, they get rid of some of their PFAS every month in blood. So we know that having a baby, unfortunately, of course, it means that the baby is born contaminated.
Yeah.
And then when you nurse your baby, PFAS is transferred through by lactation to the baby that way. I want to stress that breast is still best when you can, and that babies do better if they're nursed anyway. I forgot to mention one of the side effects that's been shown in many studies with PFAS is impacts on the immune system, both suppression of the immune system, so children having, say, more colds, more fevers, also increase in autoimmunity. So, for example, ulcerative colitis, which is not a nice intestinal condition, and so autoimmune has been shown to be associated with PFAS. So, I mean, I think we don't have an easy way of getting rid of it. There's no drug that you can take.
So I was going to say, it's not like EDTA can chelate lead. So if somebody has been exposed to too much lead, it is possible to extract it from the body. But you're saying that when it comes to PFAS, we don't have the quote-unquote antidote or the chelator that'll suck it out of our bodies.
That is correct. There has been at least one study which has suggested that a drug called cholestyramine, which used to be used to reduce cholesterol, could help with at least one of the PFAS, with PFOA. Not much evidence that it helped at all with PFOS, but it was a very small study, really done only with three people. I wouldn't put too much weight on it. There is observations from what's called the C8 study, which was the study that was connected in West Virginia and Ohio near the DuPont plant, which produced PFOA. And the measurements there, they took of blood of 67,000 people, and that blood was taken in the mid-2000s. And what they showed, there were a small number of people who took cholestyramine to reduce their cholesterol. I mean, that's not a drug that's used much anymore. Those people did seem to be on the lower end of the spectrum for the level of contamination.
Well, as I said when we introduced you, we've known about PFAS chemicals for decades. Why can't the regulators, and you were one of them.
I have to correct you. I was never a regulator.
Well, you were at EPA for a while.
I was at EPA, but always I was doing research.
You were the scientist. Right. But why can't our regulators say, these chemicals could be dangerous or are dangerous? We need to cut back. I mean, you said 12,000, maybe 16,000 different chemicals, and they're everywhere. They're in our clothes, they're in our cosmetics, they're in our furniture, they're in our carpets, they're in our cars.
Not to mention our water.
Why don't they do something?
I'm not at EPA now. I can't directly answer that. I can say that EPA has been looking at least two of these for around 23 years now. 3M, which was one of the major producers of PFAS in the country, and they were the sole producer of PFOS, which is, I should say, the major contaminant in essentially all freshwater fish from this country, and essentially all freshwater fish have it. They knew, actually, as early as 1975 or 76, that the general population had elevated levels of PFAS. They had data from their laboratories, as did DuPont, that there were problems with some of their workers. They had studies that they had conducted on animals showing adverse effects. 3M didn't report that, which was required under TSCA, the law passed in 1976, required them to report it. Didn't report it till EPA until 1998.
Mm.
And I can tell you when that happened, all of a sudden, I don't know if I should say what I'm going to say, the shit hit the fan.
We can bleep that.
Okay. I think what happened was that all of a sudden research started to happen. Before that, no one was doing it. They didn't know it was a problem.
You're listening to Dr. Linda Birnbaum. She's a toxicologist who directed the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences and the National Toxicology Program for years. Prior to that, she directed environmental health research at the EPA. Dr. Birnbaum served as president of the Society of Toxicology and chaired the Division of Toxicology at the American Society for Pharmacology and Experimental Therapeutics. She's currently a scholar in residence at Duke University.
After the break, we'll learn more about the precautionary principle. How could it help us avoid the harms from forever chemicals?
What should we be doing in the U.S. to protect the environment and ourselves?
Are there drugs that contain PFAS?
To protect our families, we'd want to know about products containing these chemicals and alternatives without them.
We should watch out for upholstery, carpets, dental floss, and microwave popcorn bags, among numerous other items.
At one time, lead was as widespread as forever chemicals are now. For the most part, we have drastically reduced people's exposure to lead. Can we do something similar for PFAS?
What should we be telling our representatives in government?
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by CocoVia Dietary Supplements. Cocoflavanol supplements that support cognitive and cardiovascular health, made with a proven concentrated flavanol extract. More information at CocoVia.com.
Today, we're learning how to avoid the harms from forever chemicals. These compounds seemed so promising when first developed, but they persist in the environment and in us.
Our guest is one of the world's foremost authorities on toxicology. Dr. Linda Birnbaum was director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences and the National Toxicology Program for many years. She is currently a scholar in residence at Duke University.
Dr. Birnbaum, I am just astonished that these chemicals have been out there. We've been exposed to them for decades. There are thousands and thousands of them, and nobody seems to really have done very much over these decades. Maybe now there's sort of a little recognition, a little more concern. But I love the idea of the precautionary principle, the idea that in some countries you have to prove these chemicals are safe before you're allowed to put them on the market and before everybody's exposed to them. Here, it seems like you're exposed to them, and then maybe if a scientist such as yourself discovers a problem, somebody will talk about it. Maybe somebody will eventually do something about it, but it can take years, and the lawyers get involved, and it's a mess. So why, first of all, is anybody doing anything about PFAS in other countries, and what should we be doing in this country, ideally, to protect our kids, ourselves, the environment?
About three big questions there, so you may have to remind me, but I'll start with the precautionary principle, which does not say, oh, you act in the absence of any information. It says you act in the presence of concerning information, even if you don't have certainty. And I could argue that science is rarely certain. We always learn new things. The real issue with PFAS is they're not going to leave the environment. Many of them aren't going to leave us. I mean, and that the fact they're not going to leave the environment, that's true for all of them. Now, not all of those 10, 12, 15,000 chemicals are intentionally made. Some of them are breakdown products from the ones that are being intentionally made. And I think that's an important thing because for a long time, and for many of the regulations, they only look at what's being made. They don't look at what's out there as far as regulations. Other countries are approaching it this differently, especially in the EU, where they actually have a proposal now from five Scandinavian countries to ban the production and use of all PFAS, except if they are essential. Now, what does essential mean? That's probably a sticky wicket, but that has been used in the Montreal Protocol to reduce the use of the chlorohydrofluorocarbons to protect us so that we don't have the big ozone hole. So the essentiality with PFAS, there are kind of three parts to it. The first part is you say, do you really need it? And if you don't need it, like you don't really need stain-proof carpet, you stop using it. And then the next question is I really need that, but there's a safe alternative. Well, there are some stain proofs that are safe. And by safe, that's a little bit...
relatively safe, perhaps.
Relatively safe. And I think the point is also, unfortunately, since we don't require testing before chemicals on the market, we sometimes don't know if it's really safe. I mean, in Europe, there are requirements to test before it goes on the market. So if something is a problem, well, PFAS is a problem, but there's a safe alternative, you stop using it because you have the safe alternative you switch to. And I should say that a safe alternative doesn't have to be another chemical. It could be another approach, another way to get to your solution. And the third essentiality issue is this is something we really need. And there are no alternatives at this point. So there are a number of drugs that are PFAS. There are a number of pesticides that are PFAS. And maybe we really need them. Certainly some of the drugs we may really need. So you keep using them, but you start looking for alternatives to them.
And you probably need to start paying attention to some of the consequences. So if we know diabetes is a problem associated with a particular drug or chemical, we start testing for it. And then if it shows up, we start treating it.
I think that's important. And I do want to mention that the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine issued a report, a consensus report last year, just a year ago, where they basically made recommendations where if your blood level was at 2 parts per billion for PFAS, there, and they were actually looking at a total of 7 PFAS, which is, again, those were the ones they could measure. There were specific recommendations for follow-up and some testing, and if your levels were more than 20 parts per billion, they were really concerned and said you needed to be followed closely for a number of adverse health effects.
Now, you have just mentioned that there are some drugs, pharmaceuticals, that we take to make ourselves healthier that actually are PFAS, and I did not know that. Do you happen to have any names?
I should, because I've looked it up, but I can't tell you. Okay. Although I will give you an example, is my daughter was having some surgery where she had to be totally anesthetized last week, and one of the drugs was one of the
anesthesia drugs.
Mm-hmm. drugs was isoflurane.
Okay.
And I all of a sudden I thought, fluorine, that's got to have fluoride in it.
Yeah.
So I looked it up. It's a PFAS.
Uh-huh.
Fascinating. Now, there are listeners right now who are saying, okay, you have scared the S out of me. What do I do? What does my family do? How can we reduce the amount of PFAS in our personal environments?
As I said, for an individual, it's not easy. You can make sure, find out what's in your water, and you should be able to get that information from your water company. If these new regs go into effect, then the water company will have to have low levels, which would be good. But if your levels currently exceed that, make sure you have a filter and make sure you change that filter, even if at this point you're just putting it in the garbage.
Now, what about products?
Products is, try to avoid a lot of packaging of foods has PFAS in it, plus other chemicals you don't really like, plastic packaging. Unfortunately, some of the compostable plates and plates and stuff have PFAS in them. Look for things that are labeled no PFAS if you use that kind of thing.
Or go really old school and use
I tend to use a lot
plate.
Of Pyrex.
Yeah,
and
we do too.
You know, I even take, for example, things with me, if I'm going out to eat, so I don't have to get a styrofoam or something that I mm-hmm. don't know it's loaded. The other thing you can do is organic food in general has less PFAS than packaged food.
Mm-hmm.
But, we have to be careful. Not everybody can afford it.
Right.
And people may not have the option. And frankly, if it's organic food, you may want to know where it comes from, because there have been several episodes now in the country where biosolids were used to fertilize the fields. And now we find out that a lot of biosolids have a lot of PFAS in them.
Based on what the people who provided those biosolids were exposed to, presumably, no?
Well, it's not only the people. It's mm-hmm. wastewater, and that may be used to make your biosolids.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that in general, organic foods would be less likely to contribute very significantly. But it's impossible for any of us to really control our exposure. We really need policy change.
Well, we've got things like certain kinds of dental floss, believe it or not, have PFAS. We probably should avoid some of our fabrics that are stain resistant and water repellent. What about things like, let's just say upholstery? How can we find out if our upholstery has stain resistant PFAS chemicals? And what about fire resistant stuff? And fire extinguishers with foam. Is that a problem?
The foam fire extinguishers, I don't think, contain what's called the air film forming foam, or AFFF. I think they're usually carbon dioxide, I believe. I'm not an expert there.
But there were some problems with the chemicals that are used, for example, in forest fires.
Well, that's a different kind of chemical, and they don't use the AFFF there. It is some kind of bromine.
Ah, okay.
But it's not your kind of brominated flame retardant that would, for example, be on your couch.
Uh-huh.
What about microwave popcorn bags?
I don't use them anymore.
Okay. So that's
something.
So
maybe we should all not use them anymore.
Yeah, the old air popper or the...
It works.
Doing it on your stove with a little bit of oil works fine.
Works just fine. So the bottom line is try. But no matter how hard you try, even if you have a water filter, you're still going to be exposed. So you might want to just test and find out how much PFAS is circulating in your body. But if you find that it's high, there's nothing you can do to make it disappear. Should we be asking our representatives and our senators and ultimately our regulators to help us get rid of some of these chemicals, a little bit like the Scandinavians?
I would be very happy if we did that. And there are, in our states are way ahead of the federal government. So the states have regulated these chemicals in water for a while. The new regulation, proposed regulations for federal EPA are lower than any of the state regulations. But there were many states that were better than the advisory level that EPA had until now. I think in many states have proposals to ban PFAS, like in food packaging. In 2020, in the National Defense Authorization Act, the Department of Defense can no longer have PFAS in food packaging for all their food. That is a huge market that obviously the people making the food packaging don't want to not be able to sell to the military. Just like if California passes a law, with that being the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world, manufacturers don't make something that they can't sell in California.
Exactly.
So in some cases, the market basket is trying to talk.
What about our carpets? I mean, should we eliminate our carpets, or are there carpets that we can buy that don't have PFAS?
So as of, I believe it was 2021, some of our major carpet producers are no longer using PFAS. So I think newer carpets are better. If you have any, for example, I guess they're still called Oriental carpets, they have no PFAS, for example, on them. So I think there are kinds of carpets that are perfectly fine. And again, let's not drive ourselves crazy. Let's do what we all can individually that makes sense to us. Don't microwave in plastic, for example. You know, do things that make sense. Have a filter on your water. I think that makes sense. Don't buy pans that have PFAS in them. You know, you don't have to have nonstick pans. Cast iron works well. The new ceramic pans work well. You know, there are things that we can do to reduce our ongoing exposure. If we reduce our ongoing exposure, over time, what's in our bodies will decrease.
Before we end our conversation, I want to go back to something that we took for granted for many years, and that's lead. It was in our gasoline. We took it for granted. We didn't worry about it. And then eventually somebody said, oh, maybe that's not such a good idea. Let's have some non-lead gas. And that's what we have today.
Of course, it was in paint.
And of course, it was in paint. And it's in plumbing. And so I'm guessing that, you know, we've made a huge difference when it comes to lead. It's not perfect. There's probably lead in a lot of places and in our bodies, but we have made a change. Can we do the same kind of thing we did for lead against PFAS?
I think it will take much longer and be more difficult because lead has a half-life in our blood of only about a month. So if you stop the exposure, now that doesn't mean that lead's all gone away. Some of it has gone into your bones. And when you get old and you start undergoing osteoporosis, some of it will be re-released. And you know, people always think about lead and intelligence problems and behavior problems in children. But lead is a very, very severe cardiac toxin and kidney toxin. And there are estimates that maybe 400,000 people die a year in the United States from the lead that's emitted in air pollution. So, and due to cardiac effects, basically. So I think lead, it's infinitely better than it was in the 1970s. We know that the levels in the 1 year after the banning of leaded gasoline, blood levels dropped dramatically. And we also know that because of continued regulation of lead, we know that levels, for example, in 1 to 3 year old children continue to drop. So the top like 2.5 percentile of children in that age range, even I want to say 10 years ago, was at five micrograms per deciliter. Now it's down to, I think, 2.5.
And that is definitely a good
thing. It's a success story that I think we should, you know, we know. Now, I know that here in Durham, just recently, they found lead in parks. And that's not good. And that's because there used to be smelters and incinerators present.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you have that in the past, you got to be a little careful.
Dr. Birnbaum, if we really want to make a difference not only for right now, but also for the future, what should we be telling our representatives, our senators?
I think we need to tell them that PFAS is bad, we don't want it, and the polluter should pay. So the companies that made these chemicals, the companies that use these chemicals and products, those are the ones who should have to pay for the cleanup, not, for example, the people drinking water having to pay increases in their water bill because of the filters that have to be put on their water.
Dr. Linda Birnbaum, thank you so much for talking with us on The People's Pharmacy today.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Dr. Linda Birnbaum. She's a toxicologist and scientist emeritus. Dr. Birnbaum was director of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences and the National Toxicology Program for years. She served as president of the Society of Toxicology and chaired the Division of Toxicology at the American Society for Pharmacology and Experimental Therapeutics. She is now a scholar in residence at Duke University.
Lynn Siegel produced today's show, Al Wodarski engineered, Dave Graydon edits our interviews, B.J. Lederman composed our theme music.
This show is a co-production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, with The People's Pharmacy.
The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Cocovia Dietary Supplements. Cocovia Memory Plus is formulated with 750 milligrams of cocoa flavanols, a level clinically proven to improve three different types of memory and support brain function. More information at cocovia.com.
Today's show is number 1,404. You can find it online at peoplespharmacy.com. That's where you can also share your comments about today's interview. You could also reach us through email, radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
Our interviews are available through your favorite podcast provider, including YouTube Music. You'll find the podcast on our website on Monday morning.
At peoplespharmacy.com, you could sign up for our free online newsletter. That way, you can get the latest news about important health stories. When you subscribe, you also have regular access to information about our weekly podcast. You can find out ahead of time which topics we'll be covering.
In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next week.